This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to The Big Question. We're discussing, does secularism bring peace and prosperity to society? We have a slightly different format to this evening's show. We're joined by two respected guests, Sundar Lal, who's been a council member of the National Secular Society for over 30 years, and Abdullah Al-Andalusi, who is a convert to Islam from Portuguese origin. He's been active within the London Da'wah scene for several years and is currently director of the Muslim Debate Initiative. Sundar and Abdullah, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
The format of this evening is we're going to have an opening address by Sundar for 10 minutes, followed by a rebuttal from Abdullah for 5 minutes, and then Sundar will have the opportunity to engage in a counter-rebuttal for 2 minutes, after which we will open the phone lines for your questions. We will then reverse the format. Abdullah will give his address for 10 minutes, rebuttal by Sundar for 5 minutes, counter-rebuttal by Abdullah for 2 minutes, and again we will open the phone lines for your calls. So without further ado, we'll pass it over to you, Sundar.
All right, okay. Assalamu alaikum, ladies and gentlemen. Before I start, I would like to clarify some of the terms that have been used, like peace, prosperity, and secularism. Peace, prosperity. These things, I mean, are not so hard and fast as generally understood. I mean, everybody wants peace, but we never get it. What's the reason? Because peace is only worthwhile if it comes with justice. Peace without justice is nobody is trying to achieve. And peace in that sense, a group or a society or a person who thinks that it will bring justice, then he can bring peace. If there is no justice, there is no peace. And I will try in my little speech to make it open that it is a secularism which provides more justice to everybody, so the chances will be that secularism will bring more peace than any other system. Now the second thing is secularism. Secularism, sometimes people think, is godlessness. Well, strictly speaking, secularism is not godlessness. Secularism basically is opposed to organized religions. You see, God comes in various shapes and sizes with various definitions, and some people even call nature God. So, I mean, we are opposed to organized religions. We are secular in that sense. We do not believe that there is any life after this for all practical purposes. There it may be, but we don't know of. And then again, the term of prosperity. Prosperity is also something which secularism is very much concerned, because other the God people or the religious people, their main goal is not to provide prosperity. A good Muslim would like to be less prosperous, but a good Muslim. So if it is prosperity not with his consistent with his ideology, then he probably will not that like that kind of prosperity. So in business, we are secular people. We don't believe that there is any life after death, or anything will happen to me. I mean, once I die, the story closes so far as I am concerned here. So we only think in terms of the life in this world. And so we are more concerned with prosperity than other people, because other people can offer Jannat, other people can offer closeness to God, other people can ask afterlife with so many things. We are not in a position to offer them any of those. We can only think in terms of the world as we live in, and so we are more in a position to offer prosperity, because we are not going to worry about what will happen after death and how things will happen after death. So I like to make the point here that it is the secularist only who can bring more peace. And the reason is, one reason is that in very earlier society, people lived in one clear-cut group. If they live in a Muslim society, they are all Muslims, they all believe in one thing, and then there is one people who don't believe in one thing. So secularism in that can deal with Muslims. But these days, times have changed. Muslims come in various shapes and various sizes. And so much so, there is so much difference between the Muslims themselves these days, that the difference between secularism becomes a little bit irrelevant. All we want is that everybody, every faith, every ideology should be treated equally, and that is what secularism is about. We don't want any privilege to one kind of faith, because it's not, we are living in 21st century. If you give privilege to one group, then the other groups say, this is not it, we should also want some privilege. So what we do, that in actual life, secularism believes that there should not be any privilege to any religious organized groups. And religion should be treated as a matter of your personal belief. And this is also a little bit strange, because I was born in India, and you probably will be surprised to know that I learned my first secularist lessons from Muslims. Because in that culture about secularism, a Muslim, more or less, culturally, we tried to bring some division between cultural Muslim, religious Muslim, ethnic Muslim. So culturally, there were Muslims. I learned about, if you go in the old culture of India, there is so much, the whole Urdu poetry is full of non-Islamic things. They always say, we love the idols, we don't love in poetry, although in actual life they did. But theoretically they said, well, religion is my personal affair. Religion can always be divided into theoretical and practical. And for the most people in India, it was that if you ask who you are, they will say, I'm a Muslim, and the conversation stops there. Nobody used to ask those people what kind of Muslim you are, what do you think, what do you don't think about, that is my personal affair. So I learned, strangely enough, to be secular by the Muslims. But nowadays things have changed. People have become more and more radicalized. They are trying to become more and more what they think, what a true Muslim is. And the definition of a true Muslim from one group of Muslim is not the same as the definition of a true Muslim from another group of Muslim. Things are so difficult these days that the Muslims not only have to deal with kuffar or kafir, they have to deal with most of the Muslims, because most of the Muslims, like you go, I come from Indian background, we used to live Shias and Sunnis so happily together, there was no problem. The Hindus lived, because the kings, although they were nominally Muslims, they were very secular Muslims, and Hindus did not have any problem in living in their rule for hundreds of years without any problem. But nowadays what happens, that people want to say, if the king is Muslim, if the rulers are Muslim, they should deal with things in this way, not this way. And the problem there is that it is not one only group. I mean, so many groups. Which groups? If a Sunni group says, we want things this way, then the Shia will not agree that this thing should be done this way. So we, the secularists, are the better persons in that way, that we said, look, your religion is your affair. We do not want to deal with your personal beliefs. We only believe that we should be worried about what is happening in this world. And that is why I think secularists offer a better choice, because we are not in the business of providing you heaven. We are not in a business to provide you closeness with God. These things we don't believe in, and they create more divisions than they try to solve it. So that is why I think secularism is in a better position to offer you peace and prosperity, because we treat everybody equal, and the religion should be treated as a matter of personal belief. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you very much indeed. So there you have it, Abdullah. Secularism is the way forward. What do you think about that?
Well, thanks for inviting me on the show, and you know, thanks, Saran, for an interesting discussion on your views on secularism. I believe that secularism cannot provide justice, mainly because secularism has no values. Secularism, in its basic form, is just essentially what all religious considerations are separate from government. That's all. But a secular state, like Syria, is a secular, so to speak, is a secular state, as France or England, in terms of its secular character. But their systems of government differ wildly, because although you can be secular, it doesn't mean that there is now a certain particular kind of values that you have to adopt just because you are secular. So, for example, Saddam Hussein, he was a secular ruler, and he ruled with secularism with an iron fist. Whereas if you take Switzerland, which is also a secular country, it's not so oppressive, minus the issues regarding the minarets and so on. So what is secularism? And this topic, this idea itself, differs into multiple interpretations. Soren comes with a concept such as that, well, religious beliefs have different interpretation, but secularism has more difference of interpretation than any other religious system. For example, you could be a nationalist, an egalitarian, a meritocrat, you can be an autocrat, and you can be even a Christian democrat, and all be secular at the same time. Our government regularly changes different schools of thought, madhabs, and it's just, there's no people rising up in protest. Well, maybe except today, perhaps, with the budget cuts. But you see, these are the issues with which people face. But no one ever says, well, secularism, you can't implement it because which interpretation are you going to implement? You see, Arank Bulyent in Turkey remarked about all the chaos and kerfuffle in Turkey because he said, because of different interpretations of secularism, all this trouble is happening. So it doesn't work on that basis. He says we don't believe in an afterlife. Well, not all secularists would agree. Some people could say that John Locke, one of the famous intellectual founding fathers in a secular tradition, was a practicing a Christian and a believing Christian. He even wrote a book on the reasonableness of Christianity. So he wasn't a disbeliever in afterlife. He said that Muslims don't want prosperity. Well, our history proves otherwise. We drove civilization for hundreds of years in developing material wealth possessions, and of course, economy. Even developing the modern checking system and the various aspects of modern banking system, minus the interest, of course. He says that secularism offers material advancement because it has no morals. It's not concerned with afterlife. That's fine, but it also offers no morals at the same time, because all morals in secularism, historically speaking, were taken from Christianity. So the belief in free will and culpability came from Christianity, belief in the soul. Belief that we're all equal, this came from Christianity, because it's not based on material considerations. The philosopher Louis Poyman said that we must be equal in the eyes of God, because we're not equal in any other consideration. So they borrowed this. Also, they borrowed the kinds of morals they believe in. For example, incest is banned in a lot of secular countries. Why? Because it was banned in Christianity before it. He said that, in today's world, society is heterogeneous, whereas back in history, it was mostly homogeneous. So there's only one kind of people living in one society. Well, you obviously haven't read the history of the Middle East, which had all kinds of religious sects, ethnic groups, cultures, beliefs in a big melting pot. Islam is no stranger to different beliefs living amongst. In fact, the Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, obviously the founder of Islam, lived in a city where they had Jews and Christians living with him. So it's no stranger to a heterogeneous society, and we've dealt with that, which I'll explain in my second part. He says secularism is not about privilege. Well, I would say it is. If you are the majority group in a democracy, a secular democracy, unless you believe in a secular autocracy, of course, then the majority group will get their interests, whether it be Hindu nationalism, like obviously you're probably very well aware in India, like it be various majorities, Methodist in South America, in Kenya, in Thailand. There is infighting, civil wars and so on. In secular countries, there is these fightings. So this is the problem, that secularism doesn't bring a stop to infighting. It causes infighting more than it actually removes it. Racism is a problem with secularism. The rich also have privilege over the poor, and that's a big comment against secularism. And these are the many issues. So I don't think in any of these issues that you've mentioned, you've provided a clear-cut case where secularism itself provides clear-cut interpretation of what it is, prevents infighting, it causes prosperity, seeing as most secular countries in the world are in poverty. So, you know, just because the Brazilian football team is a Latin team doesn't mean that all Latin teams are now you know, top-class footballers.
Sure.
So just because the West is secular doesn't mean that now all secular countries must be prosperous. And I think that kind of sums up my critique.
Well, there we have it. So, Sundar, secularism is about as diverse as religion, according to Abdullah. You can respond to what he's said.
No, he wants secularism to produce one ideology. They don't believe it, that is the way to go. Secularism is not like one particular group of Islam or one particular group of a religion which has decided that this thing should that be done that way, this thing should not be that way. For instance, what women's rights are, what rights should we give to women and not women, when we discuss in parliament, we just discuss it openly. We don't even bring religion into it. Discuss openly what everybody's idea is, what women's rights should be. Similarly, what any other like in Islam, we all know that adultery is punishable with stoning to death. Well, this we don't have anything like that. We simply say if there is whether adultery should be treated as a crime or not a crime, let the people decide irrespective of their own group of religious beliefs. And we don't provide an ideology. We are not like a religious group to give you one ideal that this is the best way and you must accept it, otherwise you are not going. Secularism means let everybody have equal say in the matter and let nobody get any privilege because he believes in one group of religion. And you see, the given the exact example of these things, I mean, I can also give an example, say the trouble in Afghanistan. If you ask of the people in Afghanistan, they want their religion, they don't want secularism. So and that is why they don't want it. And you want to give them prosperity. They said, no, we would rather have less prosperity with our religion. So prosperity is not something that is the religion should speak of very much, because religion is not about prosperity. Religion is mainly concerned with your going towards heaven, going towards God, going towards afterlife. We are not interested in these things. And for other things, everybody should have an open mind. And you see, even now I say, if somebody says this is right, good. I listen to his argument. But if he says, I believe in Hinduism, and Hinduism is said, then I said, well, look, don't bring that Hinduism into it. You say, if you think something is right, give your argument, irrespective of what Hinduism is. Don't. There is no need even to bring Hinduism into it. So all matters of religion should be your personal belief. That is what I say. These days it is not possible otherwise. Look what is happening, as I said, in Pakistan. They are putting bombs in Shia's meetings when they are praying. I mean, what sort of religion is this? You can say Islam says this, Islam says that. But the problem with Islam or any other religion is that there is no one Islam. Your Islam is not the same as the Islam of the other person, and his Islam is not the same as the Islam of the third person. So when you claim to speak about Islam, you are actually giving your personal opinion about Islam. Nobody has a right. Islam is not like a pope who is the authority. I mean, if a Roman Catholic, there is any disagreement between any Roman Catholic groups, and if one group says this and the other group of Roman Catholics says this, then they will simply go to the Pope, and the Pope will decide which one is the right way. And in Islam, that is not the case. Everybody has got his own right to think what Islam is and what Islam is not. And to impose your view of Islam on every sect of Islam, the Muslims themselves will not accept it. So there is no, secularism is basically, there is no alternative. When the people believe in so many heterogeneous ideas, and so many beliefs, then the best option is leave your beliefs, leave your personal beliefs on one side, Come with the social, if you have got any views, how the progress of society should be done, talk about it. But don't bring that Islam says this, so it should be like that. Or if a Catholic say, Roman Catholic says, the Roman Catholics think this, so I mean like he, like the Pope says, that contraception is banned in the Roman Catholicism. I mean, what is this? I mean, the whole world is not going, the population of the world is getting worse and worse, and one of the reasons that the prosperity is not coming is because the population is growing all the time. I mean, look at what is happening. So the thing is that prosperity comes by many other means. Religion has nothing to do with prosperity. Religion has nothing to offer about prosperity. Religion should limit itself to offer you what is the best way after life, how you can improve your life, and how can you get closer to God, how can you get closer to heaven, and leave the matters to the in the secular hand. Secularism does not give you one ideology. Sure. It leaves everything open.
Thank you very much, Sundar Lal, council member of the National Secular Society. Thank you very much indeed. We'll hear from Abdullah very shortly, but let's first take your call. Salaamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, brother.
Who is your call addressed to?
My address is to this brother in the middle, brother Sundalal.
Sure, yeah, that's okay. Right. Sure, go ahead. What's your question?
Okay, my question is, because this brother is actually explaining about how religions are divided, this religion is called this group, that group, and whatever. We shouldn't be talking about groups. If we talk about Hinduism, Islam, or Christianity as well, the main source, if we look at our books, Hindu books, Vedas, Quran, Islamic book, or Bible, the original Bible, all of the answers about equality and everything is given in our books. Do you not believe that?
Sure. Okay, do you know, so stay on the line.
I will take the call. Right. Now, you coming about Hindus and Vedas. Very few Hindus read Vedas. Very few Hindus even have seen Vedas. Vedas are only restricted to scholars who want to study Sanskrit and read it. Hindus don't practice anything that is in the Vedas. And the current day Hindus have nothing to do in for all practical purposes to Vedas. So if you think Vedas are the basis of Hinduism, you will not be
sure.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, this is the main book. Now you are talking about Hinduism.
Sure, thank you very much for your call.
Yes, Hindus don't have a single book. Hindus don't have, like Christians or Muslims, a single book, and Hindus don't believe in that book.
Sure.
And even...
Let me bring Abdullah in. Sure. This one to the...
I think what the brother might be trying to say is that religion provides a basis for believing in the concept of equality. We are just atoms and molecules. I might be more intelligent than someone else, or less intelligent, or stronger, or less stronger, or bigger, or less, or smaller, or less athletic. And we're not all the same. We're not all of equal ability. So where do we get this idea that we're all equal? Just being the concept of race and species is debated amongst biologists, because it's just an arbitrary construct. So where do we get this idea that we are all equal? And what we see in these different religions is that we all possess a soul, which is a metaphysical element, which is equal. We're all, there's something inside us which cannot be dissected into a microscope or looked into, which is equal. And this provides the basis for the concept of equality in different societies.
But it doesn't, does it? Because often, you know, the point is that religions squabble amongst one another. So what Sundar is saying is, you know, we're running squabbling, let's just all take the secular path and we'll all live happily ever after.
Under which nationality and what section of which population are you going to look at? If I was in India, for example, if I was a Hindu, I'd be supporting Hindu interests against the minority Christian and Muslim, which led to massacres and killings in India. And it's ongoing, these kind of problems. We see in Kenya infighting where people took machetes to each other, sure. Rwanda and so on and so forth. So secularism doesn't suppress or eliminates factionalism. People just find other areas, such as nationalism, which is a secular concept, nationalism, to fight over.
Sure. So I'll put that just under that. Secularism is just a hodgepodge of incoherent, inconsistent ideas.
Well, secularism is not about ideas at all. Secularism is simply that let everybody be treated equal. It's very easy to say all religions teaches everybody to be equal. But the fact of the matter is no religion teaches everybody to be equal. And I will give you an example in Hinduism, and I will give you an example in Islam. My knowledge of Christianity is not very good, so I can't tell about it. Now look at this. In your Islam.
You've got only about 30 seconds. So you'll
30 seconds.
Okay.
The book very clearly says that those people who don't believe, who are not believers, are worse than animals. So you're talking of Islam teaches equality. Well, where is Islam teaches equality?
Well, but it also says that before God made mankind, we all were equal and had equal choices. By our choices, we are judged whether to be higher or lower than each other. And even in this system in Britain, if you commit a crime, then you're not equal to someone who hasn't committed a crime.
Okay, so stop there. I'll let you respond to...
Yes, I will answer it.
Sure.
What God decided when he created man is another matter. But religions do not treat equality. Religions always give privilege to those who believe in that religion. For it's very clearly, the Bible says, and I have got the number if you want me to tell you, that don't mix with Christians and Jews. They look after their own people. And if you mix with them, you are one of them. And I've got the quotations here.
You can sum up in a couple of seconds and then we'll go to a break. So.
Sure. Well, there's no point in the Quran addressing people that don't believe in it to say, well, do this. Because they say, well, we don't believe in it, so what's the point? The Quran has to address those people who believe in it to implement it. That's a basic prerequisite for any belief system, ideology, or political idea. And again, secularism doesn't believe in equality. Secularism, it doesn't believe in anything except the separation of metaphysical consideration or religion from society. So do not misrepresent
Well, there we have it. So I'm sure you'll get to respond to Abdullah when he gives this presentation. You're watching The Big Question live on Ahlul Bayt TV. We're discussing whether or not secularism brings peace and prosperity to society. We shall see you in a few minutes. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to The Big Question. We're discussing whether or not secularism brings peace and prosperity to society. My guests this evening are Abdullah Al-Andalusi, who is a convert to Islam, very active in the da'wah field both nationally and internationally, and is currently director of the Muslim Debate Initiative. And also to represent the National Secular Society, we have Sundar Lal, who's been a council member of the National Secular Society for over 30 years. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. The structure of the discussion this evening, we've heard from Sundar Lal, so we're now going to go straight over to Abdullah, who will give us a 10-minute presentation as to why religion, perhaps, is the solution, and why secularism is not. So over to you.
Sure, thank you. I think basically to highlight the issue, religion is prescriptive. It has positive ideas, as in it posits ideas to believe in and concepts. Now, secularism doesn't posit anything. It just has one negative point to say, which is there should be no metaphysical considerations or religious considerations in politics. However, because of this big vacuum in secularism, they've had to import Christian concepts from their, I'm talking about the West specifically, from their past, such as equality, morality, and moral culpability, because we possess free will. Free will, again, is not a materialistic concept, just ask the communists. But religion can do, or what rather specifically, for example, Islam and my kind of perspective was, if you look at history, it had a multicultural system that was unparalleled. Islam is not about imposing itself on others. So, for example, if the Christians and Jews were not forced to live under Sharia law, they were given their own law courts. So, a lot of the times, a few Western scholars have noticed that in Spain and Portugal, or Andalus as it used to be called where I'm from, the Jews and Christians went to the Muslim law courts because they found better justice there. However, they were not forced to go to the Muslim law courts, and they had their own law courts set up, and they were allowed to advance their careers in various strata of society without no restrictions on this. So this is the Islamic multicultural system, which was continued by for 1,300 years in various forms and shapes. Regarding internally within Islamic thoughts, different schools of thought, what Islam says is that everyone is allowed their own interpretations of Islam, and the state doesn't get involved in Muslim theological discussions. So we saw throughout history, some scholars were getting so angry with each other, they even called each other non-Muslim, saying, you are kafir, they say, you are non-Muslim. And the state didn't say, okay, well, I'm going to now treat these, I'm going to now classify these people as the legal status for not being Muslims because X, Y, and Z scholar said so. Well, no, because the state didn't get involved in theological disputes. But what the state did do is the state did implement Islamic law based on its interpretation. And when one leader passed away, another leader or group of scholars would be around to interpret the law to the best of their abilities in their particular time and what they believed was the strongest ideas. So Islam allows a plurality of different ideas and beliefs. And talking as a Sunni, when I see in Pakistan, you know, my Shia brothers being blown up and killed and so on for this, I say this is not Islam. This is not what I'm called on to believe. These people are sectarians. I don't know, for various issues, some in cases manipulated by external powers for other kind of agendas. And this is the problem which is happening. It is ignorant people who are ignorant about what Islam says, that actually causes this sectarian strife. And I think going on to a bit more detail of how Islam manages non-Muslims. Well, what Islam does is, as Rousseau, the famous Western philosopher, said, that we are all under a contract to the state. Because the state, it should be neutral, we have a contract, the state will provide us with the bare minimum requirement, which is for protection. The state is instituted for protection of individuals. So what Islam says is to non-Muslims who are not obligated to follow Islamic spiritual commandments and social moral imperatives, these people are only given a status whereby they are protected by the state. They'll have a police force and army protecting them. They only have to pay tax to provide its protection, nothing else. Everything else, if they want to build their own churches or synagogues, they don't have to look to the state to do it. They can raise their own taxes, and they'll have a lot of surplus because they won't be taxed as much as they were taxed in other states, which in effect, the secular state makes everybody a dhimmi, and a dhimmi is a non-Muslim citizen under the Islamic state. This is the Arabic word. But a secular state makes everyone a dhimmi because you're all under contract to the state. Whereas in Islamic state, we don't want people to be forced to adopt Islamic belief systems or morality just because we are Muslims are ruling the state. So we allow them to be different. We're not like France. France says that this is a secular state. Everyone must eliminate religious symbols from public life. You must conform. Or in England, when you had a Catholic adoption agency, which was forced, compelled to allow to adopt children to gay couples, which Catholics don't believe in. So why are you forcing the Catholics, who didn't ask for state funding in that particular case, why are you forcing them to conform to a set of values that they don't believe in? Islam allows them to believe in whatever values that they want to believe in and to live by those values. This is true multiculturalism, true tolerance. Now, I won't even say tolerance, I'd say acceptance of difference. And this is the correct context. I would say, preferably, that it's not religion that should be put into the personal life, because religion, for example, take one verse from the Quran, said that, do not neglect this life, do not neglect this worldly life. We live in the material world. And so religion is there to instruct us how to live in the material world. So it is nonsense to say that religion is only for spiritual affairs. Religion is for comprehensively your purpose in life. So I would say that secularism, if you don't want to follow religion, that's fine. But you should keep secularism to your personal belief and not force it into the political sphere on other people. I think secularists are radicals who have to secularize themselves and keep their own beliefs to themselves. If you don't want to follow religion, that's your choice. But don't impose your supremacist ideas on other people who don't follow those ideas. It is unfair. And also, I think, state what Islam did in terms of progress. Islam believes that, as is ideal, that the ultimate purpose of mankind is to worship God. Now, God commanded us to help each other. If people are sick or people are poor, what should a Muslim do? A Muslim should invest in industry, he should invest in better hospitals, he should develop the latest medical research to help the poor, to help the people who are sick and want treatment. And historically speaking, Muslims progressed the concepts of hospitals, ward system, treatments, tools, equipment, research, to fulfill this divine obligation. And they developed a Islamic system for economics, or rather the Prophet Muhammad gave us this system of economics, which prohibited interest to stop wealth concentrating only in a small amount of society, and that small part of society, that the rich people being the privileged few over the minority or the majority who are not privileged. So secularism doesn't eliminate privilege, doesn't eliminate inequality. In a lot of secular countries, in fact, most secular countries, with the possible exception of communists, who are not true secularists in a strict sense, have this imbalance and inequality in wealth. So he says, how can you live in a system which is prescriptive? I say, how can you live in a system which is not prescriptive? You'll have more trouble, more factional infighting, more people killing each other. Almost virtually all the wars of the last century was done between secular states, including World War II, which in a secular nation, which believed in democracy, you had fascism. And fascism, again, is a secular ideology. It is consistent with secularism. You can't say that Hitler or Nazism was a system that comes from Christianity or from whichever belief system, because it's not. It clearly wasn't. It clearly was a secular materialistic worldview based on race. And they took that to the nth extent and did some atrocities based on that concept, that secular consideration. So at least in religion, we have a moral system that says, you can't do this, you can't kill people just because it conflicts with your material interests. Colonialism, what was that? Utilitarianism, based on the ideas of Bentham and Mill, the two secular philosophers, you can basically do some evil to do greater good in the future, we hope. So they justified colonialism, saying it was better for the natives to be under our dominion than under their own dominion, because we are superior. And they invaded and they killed many people, justifying this, including India, as you're well aware, based on their secular ideology. So secularism has caused more harm to the world in the short 200 years, 300 years it's been alive, than religion ever has.
Sure. Well, Abdullah Dalusi, director of the Muslim Debate Initiative, thank you very much indeed, Sir Sundar Lal. There you have it. Secularism, your ideology has caused far more problems than religion.
Is nothing about ideology. We secularists don't believe in afterlife, but we don't want to convert anybody to in that belief. We say, let us discuss any problem in their own right. We don't want to impose that you should also not believe in God. Yes, if you want to believe in God, you are welcome to believe in God, as long as you also let me believe in what I do. So it is, we don't prescribe anything. And secularists have one thing you said here, and I don't like this thing which is always told by some people, Islam says that and Islam says that. It doesn't mean anything to me, because what President Zardari of Pakistan said, his Islam is this, and what the Taliban said, his Islam is this. And if you ask me my opinion, what Taliban says is more Islamic than what Zardari says, because Taliban is sacrificing their life, they are getting themselves killed. Zardari is not getting killed for his brand of Islam. So when it comes to what Islam is, do not tell me what Islam is, because it will be decided by the Muslims themselves. You don't have to tell Islam says this, because Islam does not say one thing. And the second thing, again you said equality. Since when religions bring equality? Hinduism did not bring equality. Hinduism said that if a Brahman, you are superior. If you are not a Brahman, you are inferior. Islam says the same thing. If you are not a kafir, if you are not a Muslim, you are not even a human being. And it is very clearly written in Quran itself that if you are not a believer, you are worse than, you are not even equal. Forget about being equal. Equality between believers and believers of those. So if there is a Shia, he believes in equality of all Shias. If he's a Sunni, he believes in the equality of all Sunnis. But they don't believe in equality of human beings. They have never believed in it. And that is why one group of Islam, and I can give you an example. You said we don't prescribe Islam. There were Ahmadiyya Muslims. They are here in very good number, and they are Ahmadiyya. They call themselves Muslim, but Pakistan said, look, You cannot call yourself Muslim because in our ideas you are not Muslim. So the Ahmadiyyas were banned for they will be, if they say they are Muslims, they will be put into prison because that is the official verdict of the Pakistan government. So equality never comes for a religion. Religion does not believe in equality. If you don't believe, any religion does not believe in equality. Equality is not a religious idea. Equality is a secular idea. When we say, look, everybody equal. And you are talking at one time fascism. Let me ask, tell you a very clear thing about fascism. Islam is very good when it is in power. It can be kind, it can be considerate, but when Islam feels threatened, it has nothing like in Pakistan. They are killing the Christians, like in Iraq, they are killing the Christians. Why? Because the Muslims there are feel threatened. When they were in power, there was no problem with the Christians. The Christians used to live there, but Islam is a very dangerous religion. If the Muslims themselves feel threatened that we are in trouble, then in that case they have no mercy for anybody. If you are not a Muslim, and the whole idea of equality is between, even the book very clearly says that the Muslims should be kind to Muslims, but not hard to non-Muslims. So where do you get your brand of Islam? I have read Quran so many times. I keep reading it. And your brand of Islam is a very limited brand of Islam. You know very little about Islam. You only need to know about your brand of Islam. So don't tell me Islam is this, Islam is that, because you, and I can give you a further example of the state. There were some troubles between Islamic groups, and the Pakistan government decided that made a commission, and the commission was asked to find out the reasons and that these type of things don't happen in future. And you know what are, they had thousands of pages of their report, and they say, sorry, we cannot do it because we can contacted all the ulemas, we contacted leaders of all Muslim ulemas, but when the ulemas come, not even two ulemas agreed who are Muslims. So how can we decide? If Islam did, not even two ulemas agreed on who is a Muslim. And another thing about fascism,
Five seconds remaining.
Oh, right. Okay, another thing about, I tell you fascism. To me, Islam, my moderate Islam is very good. But look what happens. If you are not a Muslim, you are welcome to become a Muslim. Like if you are not a mafia man, no compulsion to become join mafia. But once you join and once you leave, you will be killed. And that is a very clear verdict of all Islamic schools. All Islamic schools believe that if a Muslim leaves Islam, he should be killed. And you call it justice.
So Sundarlal, thank you very much. Let's now give Abdullah, you've got 2 minutes to respond there.
Quite a lot to respond to. I'll be brief. The Prophet Muhammad ﷺ said that the blood money of the Jew and Christian is equal to the blood money of the Muslim. So if a Muslim is killed, and instead of retaliation for this, the killing, the blood money is asked for, it is equal to, if in another situation a Christian or Jew is killed, this is equality. He said that the Prophet Muhammad also said that anyone who kills or harms a dhimmi, a non-Muslim citizen living in a Muslim state, has harmed me. The Prophet Muhammad, who we love very dearly, said, whoever's harmed within me has harmed me. And there's many other hadiths which are in our text, which I can quote you at another time, perhaps. Show me two secular politicians which agree on anything consistently. That's something that's quite a challenge in itself. He says that in Iraq there's killing of Christians when they're Iraq and the Muslim world has been threatened many times, and there's been a long history of Christians, Jews, and Muslims living together harmoniously. What you could say in Iraq is this factional infighting, you could blame it on the secular history, the modern secular history of Iraq, under Saddam Hussein, whereby people who, after this, were unleashed into factional viewpoints, and a lot of people weren't even religious. You had non-religious Sunnis killing non-religious Shias. They probably couldn't know the difference themselves, but just because of this name, and of course because of secular democracy, which advocates factional self-interest, you had this fighting. So that's secularism to blame there. He says secularism believes in equality. Again, that is not mandated by equality at all, by secularism at all. You've got it from religion. He says that Islam does not believe in equality because the kafir is not a human being. No, Islam does not believe in metaphysical equality because of your choices. And likewise, in a secular state, if you choose to be a criminal, then you are less of a citizen, or you have less rights than someone who chooses to be final upstanding, as long as it's choice. So we both have the equal potential to make the right choice, and therefore we are intrinsically equal. That's what Islam believes. And Islam doesn't believe that a kafir is a not human being, because the Prophet Muhammad himself said, whoever hurt a dhimmi has hurt me. So this is not, he wouldn't do this to an animal, now would he? Now, he said, and I think to finish off, he said that secularism does not believe in an afterlife. But then again, okay, if that's the case, then what is to stop them when, for example, they have this situation whereby they can invade a country to get its resources, otherwise its people will be poor. But when it goes in, you have to kill other people. The benefit to its own people is it'll get rich and there'll be no social problems within its own country, or it can do the moral thing and not invade and become poor itself, and there'll be social turmoil and trouble within its own country. Well, if you're just looking at materially, you just go invade and take the resources. What's to stop you? This is what utilitarianism is all about. It's a Western political philosophy derived from secularism. And this is the problem. Whereas in Islam, we have to see, be witness to justice even against yourselves, or let not hatred of others make you depart from justice. It's what the Quran says. So even if there's a material benefit to something, if it is unjust or immoral, we have to abstain from this. And this is why Islam gives a superior moral system and a superior system for peace than secularism does.
Abdullah Andalusi, thank you very much indeed. We've got a couple of comments from Facebook in relation to what you've been articulating. And here it says, secularism is a kind of confused political system that always rests on oppression, inequality, social indiscipline and corruption, and this has no room for peace. Now, I would put to you that during your presentation, you said that secularism does not prescribe anything.
It's not a political party.
You said it does not impose its views.
Of course not.
But yet in France, which claims to be a secular state, and obviously you were quite critical of religion on the basis that there are many different interpretations of religion, so presumably if we apply the same criterion to secularism, France's oppressing, if someone wants to wear the hijab, they're being told that they cannot do so because it would infringe upon the secular values. So is that, does that contradict
your
whole argument?
What French government is doing is French government business. French government does not claim that we are a secular
state. It does. It says that to protect our secular values.
Yes, secular values.
Well, there you have it then. To protect secular values, they're banning the hijab.
Yes. That's right. I mean, that's right.
So you're contradicting yourself now.
No. Secularism is, we leave it to the country to decide secularly whatever they do, and we can't be blamed for it.
You leave the country to decide what they secularly do. We don't want
to give a privilege to one party or the other. And the basis of what the French government has done has not brought Islam anywhere.
So secularism is about as inconsistent as religion, then, isn't it?
Well, it is an open ideology. The only thing we agree secularism.
So it's a hodgepodge of incoherent, inconsistent ideas.
We are not a hodgepodge. We simply say that religion should be a matter of personal belief. That is what we are. We are not a hodgepodge. We don't say that this means this and this means this.
So do you think, therefore,
we don't prescribe
anything. So do you agree with the French standing that secular values need to be protected in France because,
yes,
and therefore the hijab,
yes,
should be banned?
No, the hijab they have banned for other reasons. They have not brought Islam into it.
It's to protect the secularist ideology.
No, they have not brought it. They simply say this is like the buses say, if the bus wants to say a pass of a woman, then they might have to see the face of the woman. If the passport office want to make...
Mr. Lal, hijab is banned in France universities.
It's banned in schools.
That's very different to a bus stop.
Hijab is banned in many parts in Turkey.
But that doesn't
Turkey
make it right, does it?
Country.
No, but again,
Turkey
that's on the basis
country.
Of secularism. So you've got two different views of secularism.
No, we have not two different views. We simply leave
sure.
it...
Okay, so let's agree to disagree there. Let me put that question to you, Abdullah. The fact is that religion is a hodgepodge of incoherent, inconsistent ideas. Theists or those that believe in religion are, engaging anarchy purely because you just can't make up your mind as to which god you want to follow.
Well, Islam has a treatment of this. Firstly, for non-Muslims, they are allowed to believe whatever they want to believe. If they want to believe in X, Y, and Z God or X, Y, and Z spirituality, that's fine. We don't believe in one law for all because we don't believe in imposing our ideas and beliefs.